Randall O'Toole, one of the most provocative critics and writers in this country, has written several great, thoughtful books. Everything from zoning and housing to the history of urban rail transit to the automobile. This is a book over 20 years ago, The Vanishing Automobile and Other Urban Myths, appears to be vindicated because the left has been waging war on the automobile for decades and putting more and more transportation money into transit and alternatives to driving and punishing people for driving and the like. And he says, it ain't working. The war on cars is failing. And he joins us this morning to tell us why. Randall O'Toole, welcome to the John Carlson Show.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
So why is the war on cars failing?
Well, the simple answer is that cars are so convenient, they're so affordable, and they're so fast compared to any other mode of travel in urban areas that people use them no matter what kind of obstacles planners throw in their way. You know, a lot of the congestion that people face in the morning is essentially created by planners who've decided we're not going to do anything to relieve congestion because we hope people will get out of their cars and start riding transit. And it hasn't worked. And this has been going on for 50 years. 50 years ago, I think planners were probably correct that cars were gas guzzlers, they were pollutomobiles, they killed 55,000 people a year, and so they did two things. First, the federal government ordered automakers to make cars safer, cleaner, and more fuel efficient. And second, urban planners in cities across the country, including Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, said, we're going to stop building new roads, we're going to start putting all our money into urban transit instead, and we're going to try to force people out of their cars and onto transit. Well, 50 years later, the war is over. The automobile won. The planners lost. The amount of driving people do has tripled. And yet, despite this increase in driving, there's been a huge decline in air pollution. There's been a huge decline in, or a huge improvement in fuel economy. There's been a huge improvement in safety. And that's because we made cars that were cleaner, safer, and more fuel efficient than before. So if we have any problems with the automobile, the way to solve the problems is to make better automobiles, not to try to force people out of their cars, because that doesn't work, and it just makes expensive problems that we don't need.
Yeah, I've often said we don't take credit in this country for good news. And you, I think, have just given a lot of people good news they may not have been aware of, that while we have tripled the number of miles driven in the last 50 years in this country, air quality has actually improved, and safety on the roads has also dramatically improved.
Well, the air quality improvements aren't just a little bit either. Air on average was 89%, or excuse me, there's an average of 89% less pollution coming out of all motor vehicles in 2021 or 2019 before the pandemic than there was in 1970. 89%. That means the average car on the road is only polluting about 2% as much as the average car polluted in 1970. New cars probably pollute only about 1% as much. They are so clean. There was recently a flurry of news reports about how the pollution from tires wearing out was now a terrible concern because it was worse than the pollution coming from the tailpipes of your cars. And the impression we were supposed to get was that cars were terrible polluters and that their tires were a serious cause of pollution. And the reality was what that meant was that the pollution from the tailpipes was so minimal that the anti-automobile people had to start complaining about pollution from tires because there wasn't any more pollution coming from the tailpipes anymore.
Well, you also... go ahead.
No, that's okay.
Okay, you use a great example here. You say, in Denver, and, you know, 20 years ago, 2000, 8.5% of the workers in Denver took transit to work. And in the Denver area, which is the suburbs surrounding, it was less than 8.5%. It was closer to 5%. Since then, since that year, 2000, that region spent $8 billion building light rail and commuter rail. And by 2019, again, before the pandemic, the share of workers commuting by transit in Denver was no longer 8.5%. It was closer to 7.5%. And the metro area, it was the same, 4.8%, just under 5%. All those billions of dollars did not move the needle one bit.
Well, that's not even the worst case. I mean, you can look at Portland, which is supposed to be a great transit city. The New York Times once said, Portland is a city that loves transit. Well, the reality is that Portland officials love transit. They love to spend money on transit, but Portlanders don't love transit. In 1980, 10% of Portland area commuters took transit to work. And then they started building light rail, and now they have 5 light rail lines, a commuter rail line, and 2 streetcar lines. And today, less than 8% of take transit to work. So they spent all this money, and it went from 10% to 8%. Seattle isn't much better. Seattle actually was doing very well with the bus system. 9% of commuters were taking transit to work with the bus system. And then they spent this huge amount of money on light rail. And right now, the percentage of people taking transit to work in Seattle, of course, is very, in the Seattle urban area, is very low. It's only about 4%. So now, all the money that's been spent on light rail in Seattle has basically gone down the drain.
So after all that money that has been spent on light rail, the percentage of people going to work by transit has fallen by more than 50%.
Exactly. And it's not going to come back. You know, what's happened is the urban planners have tried to create their ideal of a society. And basically, their ideal is based on Paris, or actually Moscow, where everybody lives in dense housing and everybody gets around on the metro or light rail or the bus and doesn't drive much. And that was never going to work in the United States. And a Gallup poll just before the pandemic asked people, where do you live and where do you want to live? And they found out that 40% of the people who live in dense cities wanted to live somewhere else, mostly in the suburbs or in rural areas. Whereas there were fewer people who living in the suburbs and rural areas and actually wanted to live there. And what happened was the pandemic came along, and people learned that they can be actually more productive working at home. And, you know, almost half of all employed people in Bellevue and Seattle are now, or in 2021, were working at home. It was 48% of the people in Bellevue and 47% of the people in Seattle were working at home last year. And that's presumably continuing at nearly those numbers this year. So if they're at home, they're saying to themselves, why do I have to be in this crowded city that I don't like when I'm being more productive working at home? So they're moving to places like Ellensburg and Olympia and,
yeah,
and
Cleom,
you know,
and
north of Bellingham, you know, anywhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to be in a crowded place. Seattle lost 20,000 residents last year.
Yeah.
And Denver lost 15,000. All the big cities in America, their populations declined.
Now, do you think that at least a respectable portion of the people who are not working at the office will eventually gravitate back toward the office, Randall O'Toole?
Well, what it looks like is that a lot of people are going to work on a hybrid model where instead of coming into the office 5 days a week, they might come into the office 2 days a week. And that people have a travel budget in their heads. It's both a dollar budget and it's a time budget. And if you're willing to spend 5 hours a week traveling and you work in an office 5 days a week, you're willing to travel about 30 minutes to the office and 30 minutes back home, that adds up to 5 hours a week. But if you only have to go in the office twice a week, then you're willing to drive, 2 hours to get there and 2 hours back, and that still ends up being only about 5 hours. I guess 90 minutes to get there and 90 minutes to get back. That ends up only being about 5 hours a week, and so you're willing to live a lot further away from the office. And that's what we're seeing is people are moving out, they're moving to rural areas, they're moving to suburbs. Most of the big suburbs that are low density have been growing. High density suburbs where planners have successfully packed people into compact housing, those have been losing population too, but the low-density suburbs have been growing, rural areas have been growing,
yes, yes.
And I think that's going to continue.
Randall O'Toole, he has been a visiting fellow at Yale and at Berkeley, formerly with the Cato Institute, again, author of several books on American life, including transportation and housing. His latest article, Losing the War on Cars. Great having you with us this morning, Randall O'Toole. If people want more information about you and the Thoreau Institute, where do they go?
TI.org is the Thoreau Institute, and I post several times a week to the Anti-Planner blog, which is on the Thoreau Institute's website. If you're interested in passenger trains like I am, I think passenger trains are something whose time has passed, but they're still fascinating to me. I've got a website called streamlinermemories.info.
All right, there you go. Randall, look forward to having you on again. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
You got it. That's Randall O'Toole joining us, the John Carlson Show.